I decided that being in the middle of August, it's always a time when so many people are traveling, including my husband. And so I thought, well, let's just make it an intimate time, and I'll sit and just try and be present. And that's my goal, to be present and to connect with my story as I share tonight. We've been going through every 6 weeks or 2 months a series of victorious limps, and where different ones are sharing their story. And tonight is my turn. And but I'm just trying to get centered so that the story is very, like all our stories, are intimate part of us. They are us, right? Our stories are us. And if I can be present to my story as I share, it's been said that our stories read each other, and I think that's true. And I'm still feel like I'm cockeyed here. All right, so some of you will be familiar with, I promise I'll stop messing with that. Some of you can be familiar with parts of my story. There's pieces that all of you are familiar with. But I wanted to go ahead and share in a more comprehensive way, although it's still going to be just a portion, of course. We won't be here for weeks, I don't know, whatever. Okay. Right. We are all wounded. And we all have stories of loss and sorrow. Amazingly, those stories usher in the possibility of being made new. I love that. But it's a messy business, the being made new. Renovation is so messy. Where I nanny, last winter, they were renovating all the bathrooms at once. No bathrooms. And dust was everywhere. And as they were taking things apart, they discover more problems and more stuff that needed to be fixed. And as you dig deeper, there's more and more and more. Well, that resonates with me. And it got real messy, and it was undone for a long time. And it really isn't like on HGTV, where, you know, in 45 minutes or an hour, they completely take apart the house, put it, and in community and laughing, they all put it back together. And in an hour, you have a Street of Dreams home. And unfortunately, the renovation of our lives is not quite like that. But I have, in my renovation, I've come to feel bonded to the chrysalis or the cocoon because they go through total renovation. Completely undone, liquefied. I need to stop there, not say that flippantly. Being liquefied is not... Yeah, being ashes, beauty from ashes, it's such a beautiful phrase. Ryan had it tattooed on his arm. When something's ashes or liquefied, it ceases to be what it once was. It's completely gone. And it's dark. And it's dark sometimes for a long time. That's been my journey as we planted this church 15 years ago. Renovatus is Latin for renovation. I'm kind of wishing now we would have named it like Beautiful Life Church or Church Full of Light and Not Dark, but not like renovation. I mean, we realized that God was going to renovate some of you, but I didn't think about him completely liquefying my life. And let me stop myself there, though. I don't think God undoes us. I don't think the catastrophes, the awful things that happen are him. I think he comes in and puts the pieces back together, and he promises to use all the crap that happens in this world, this messy world. He said, that's the promise, is that I'm going to take it all and I'm going to use it and make a difference for the world, not just for you and your family, but for the world. So, but God met me there, met me here in the messy, liquidy dark of tragedy and loss. And like I was just saying, that I'm convinced that God does not bring the devastation and pain, but he indeed is present in all of it. Emmanuel, God with us, he is present. So I'm going to give you a brief window into the level of dark. I felt like for us to really get the picture of what the renovation process, we kind of have to have more pieces to the puzzle and the contrast. I'm going to try and be as present as I can as I share, because some of the things I'm going to tell you is difficult to say, and it might be difficult to hear as well. But I have other things to share that are beyond what happened to me, and I'll just share a little bit of that. But so I want to just move in so I can get to some other stuff as well. In September of 2004, we, together with a launch team of 12, with Stan and Gina Granberg, for those of you who know them, and Ryan and Jessica Woods and some others, we started the stretching and growing process of starting Kairos' first church plant, which is, this is Renovatus. In October, our second month, so we ended youth ministry end of August, and September was our first official month of pre-launch, of getting this ready to launch, and we'd be doing that for a year. And in the second month, my mom mysteriously died. And the realities to that story are still hidden. We don't know what happened to her. And that was the beginning. And that began a dark journey of discovery of truths about my childhood experience that had previously been buried due to threat and trauma. I began therapy to try and unravel all that was being revealed. And I began a journey into a dark abyss. I knew I had almost no memory of childhood, but I began to discover why. I was diagnosed with a severe dissociative disorder, and so began years and years of memory work and trauma work and grief work. Grief actually validates and extends compassion to our pain. Grief and lament are the path to healing. Ungrieved story holds us hostage and spills our pain onto all our people. As I gave permission to my body and mind to tell the stories, my memory began to wake up and reveal some of my story. So there I was, working on reaching out to neighbors, beginning home community groups, helping to create a new DNA for this fledgling church with Kevin and the team. And yet weekly, I found myself sitting in my therapist's office, holding artwork I had done that violated the fact that as a child, I was put into cages, experienced ritual abuse, which included animals, and complex sexual abuse. And then left my therapist's office to go to staff meeting to work on the Easter service and community events. This moment, I want to encourage us all to take deep breaths. Tummy breaths are good at this moment because it makes us present with each other. My My body felt literally like I carried lead weights with trying to hold these truths and to try and walk through my reality as I went through my days, trying to be present, interact with my current world. The result of that level of trauma and how as a child I survived emotionally was my complex ability to dissociate and put away all the terror that was happening to me, which is why I was able to function, because none of it was in my conscious memory. I'm getting there, just a second. So the journey of the last 15 years has been one of waking up, of learning to be present. Through this time of remembering and subsequently walking through my trauma consciously for the first time was an encouragement from my therapist to focus on extreme self-care. Do less. Get a massage. Mind you, we're starting a church. Get a pedicure. Be still. Do yoga. Rest. Journal. Do therapeutic art. Grieve. But we were trying to get a baby church off the ground. God, how do you do less? I don't know. A few years ago, an older friend actually validated that I did do less, surprisingly. She said, I used to think you were a recluse. And honestly, that was validating because I felt like I wasn't, I didn't know how to juggle this all of it. And because the push, there was two sides in me. There's one side, the push within me to keep doing more, because doing more keeps us ahead of our story, keeps us going so fast that my story won't be able to catch up and I won't feel the pain. But then there's also the desperate need to be still and honor my whole self, honor my story, honor my body and heart, and grieve all that I survived and all that I lost. Our bodies are amazingly made. It's amazing because our bodies will hold the pain, all our pain, childhood pain for us, until we are willing to consciously walk through it and grieve all that we endured. Our bodies deserve much kindness and compassion. You are all aware of our loss of Ryan, our son. But I wanted to share a little bit more to that story. When Renovatus was 6 years old, Ryan and Jessica, part of our launch team, had prayerfully been sent to the other side of Vancouver to start Grassroots Conspiracy, and they had been having people into their home and just loving, as he would say, loving people where they live, work, and play. Ryan was just finishing his master's at Rochester College. And while I was in the darkest abyss of my new tragic memories, I was sure life could not get any darker. And then Ryan discovered he had his brain tumor in his spine. Cancer at 28 years old. Church planters themselves, partners, friends, our children. And we walked as best we could with Ryan and Jessica Jones in India in his final 17 months. And even deeper grief would be our constant companion. For several days before Ryan died, our kids gathered and a few close friends. And we all took turns sleeping on couches and administering meds, sips of water, till he wasn't able. Four-year-old India was Ryan's constant companion. She would just stay on his bed next to him most of the day, coloring, and a few times singing, I'll love you forever, I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my daddy, he'll be. More deep breaths. On his final morning, Jess, Kevin, Jen, and I surrounded him as he sunk deeper into the in-between worlds. or he isn't here, but he wasn't there either. I held his feet as they were cramping up from lack of oxygen, and we watched and listened as his breath filled with liquid and more time between each breath. And we spoke tender messages of thanks for how he had blessed us and told him that it was okay, that he could let go. He did everything he could to prepare Jessica and the kids for after he was gone. But no one can prepare for the loss of a best friend and the loss of a daddy. And Ryan died. Again, tummy breaths. But the trauma of that day was not over. That evening, Jessica and Ben and Jen and some friends all went to a local pub. And Ben, our son-in-law, developed severe abdominal pain. He was at the hospital by evening. And as we all prepared for a funeral, Ben fought for his life for 22 days in the hospital. Surgery would clean out infection and save his life. The level of trauma we all carried has no words. Ryan left us with 6 years of blogs that brings tears and laughter when I read. What a gift he gave to Leva, his writings. Those blogs are still up. We still keep in the posts, the website on. There's also the last day stories that from Soul Pancake, the videos on YouTube that most of you have seen. Grassrootsconspiracy.com is where you can see his blogs. Sorrow has been our home address for 15 years. While we started this church and tried to lead with a severe limp. Although I discovered that sorrow and joy are the closest of companions, actually. So often in community, we allow people a few months to grieve, but then we need them to be done, we need them to be happy again, we just want to know how we can fix it. I get that. It's hard to be with someone in pain when we can't change it. And a side note is that I think I've decided at this moment and recently that one of the biggest gifts that we can give each other is to just be with and just allow each other to experience our pain, experience our grief, wherever we're at, or not. We need to remember that laughing doesn't mean that the sorrow is gone. I think sorrow is one of my precious companions that I will have the rest of my life. But her sister Joy is close beside. Because I dwelled in the dark of the cocoon, I chose to be fully there and to turn toward suffering. But eventually, I was able to also see the beauty around me. I wonder if it doesn't end up giving us, I just called it beauty goggles or binoculars, because as we grieve, we begin to see the contrast of what we've lost and what we still have. And that gets more and more distinctive. And so gratitude for what we have can well up. Okay, I want to share with you a few of the treasures I found in the dark. Most of the mystics have talked about grief being the doorway to joy and presence. In fact, I'm convinced that many of the richest treasures are actually hidden in the dark. I feel like I'm surrounded by different... This was a gift after we lost Ryan. Where there is ruin, there is hope for a treasure. I feel like that message is all around us, all around us. In fact, I actually began a blog last year entitled Treasures in the Dark. And my hope for this blog is exploring how to hold the hard parts of our stories while also sifting through and receiving some of the beautiful treasures we find there in the dark. Treasures that give us hope. I'm going to get to this in a minute, but no, I'm skipping ahead. One of the gifts that we give each other, as I mentioned, is being present with each other and listening, but it's also in allowing our people to my experience is in our uncomfortableness with pain, especially the pain of those we love, those we're around, that we things come out of our mouth that we wish they wouldn't have. Platitudes, little quips that we've heard that are so shallow. And I can't really judge about it because I want to, but... Because, they were said to me, but when I, as I went along after everything in the last 6 years or so, as I processed my grief and I encountered, there's some times that I encountered someone in grief and out of my mouth came something that was not helpful at all. I was like, oh my gosh, I thought I would never say that to someone in grief or in pain. And I decided it was because at that moment, I wasn't willing to meet them there. I wanted to stay in the surface. And if you stay there, that's all you got. There's just shallow stuff up there. And it's not going to be what they need. And it's really best to just, if you can't go there at that moment, because sometimes we can't. Then it's best to just be your body to be there. Just don't say words. And also the challenge also is we want to fix each other. We want to take it away. We don't want them to be hurting. We don't want them to be in pain. And fixing also minimizes my pain. Minimizes your pain when we try and fix each other. And so I had, I keep wrestling with this because I don't want this to be a here, fix it kind of thing. But out of the blog and everything, I just decided and I'm going to talk more about the cocoon, so I'm really getting ahead of myself, but well. I started making these little ceramic cocoons, and my goal was to have them be, three goals, and I'll read you the little card with it, because I want to listen as I read as well, listen for myself at this moment as well, to see if this really, if it's going to be minimizing. I don't think so, but that's what I'm still processing, but to be able to meet someone and not all the hurting places would be appropriate. So that's also prayer. There's always prayer involved in how we bless someone with a book or with a something, with a trinket or with something, it's not always the right moment. Or so, but since in my pain story, I want to control everything, I think I'll just let people decide for themselves. And so I wrote this, the three things was, I want to give each other validation. I see you. I see your pain. Don't we all want to be seen? We want to be seen. We want people to see that we're hurting. And so to validate that pain, to see someone, to validate that pain, and then a little piece of hope. Not a fixing hope. That's what I don't want it to be. So these little cards, the cocoon, a gift of hope, says there are seasons of our lives when things get hard and dark. We all tend to avoid darkness and what may be lurking there. But the surprising thing is that often in the dark times, new life is beginning. It is common in nature, such as in the cocoon or chrysalis. For the caterpillar, the cocoon is sacred space. Yes, it goes through a desolate darkness when it is completely undone. Its identity seems lost. But even in that amorphous mess, there are seeds of the beauty that it will become. Seeds placed there in the beginning of its creation as an egg. And I don't have this in here, but I have it in my notes that it's their original purpose and intended beauty. That's the seed. The dark usually is filled with loss. Everything in us wants to run, get out of this painful place, find answers and solutions, escape. But I want to suggest to you that this dark abyss you now find yourself in is actually where you will find your true, beautiful self. This season of darkness is a time of letting go. Control, clinging, hanging on are often where most of us live, especially when crisis comes. But as you find yourself in this place of pain, having lost a job, a loved one, a marriage, a sense of security, your health, hope, when much in life doesn't make any sense anymore, rest in this dark place. Counterintuitive, I know. But as a piece of coal buried deep through pressure, heat, and darkness is transformed into a diamond, you are being transformed. For the caterpillar in the chrysalis, she ceases to be who she once was. She is completely changed. She lets go, and then one day she flies. Behold, I am making all things new. May this little cocoon be a reminder of hope, a seed of beautiful things to come within you. So we'll just sit with that. Now that I jumped way ahead, so I just felt so connected with the chrysalis and with the cocoon and this journey that, you know, you've all seen my tattoo of that journey of the caterpillar and the chrysalis. I kind of watched the chrysalis, the cocoon was a little bigger on there. It's kind of hidden, but then that kind of means something too to me, because when we're in the dark, we're kind of not out there. We're kind of tucked away under that leaf. We're kind of obscure. We're kind of, yeah, in a... we're kind of tucked away. Yeah. And then the hope of the butterfly. And I think that journey happens probably many times in our life, not just one time. But what I found is that in the dark is where I found many treasures, in the place of unknowing and mystery. The combination of extreme loss and trauma and being in ministry requires extreme self-care. The most important one for me, I think, was my coffee shop. And you guys, most of you have heard me talk about that before. I needed some place to escape to. We might choose a different sacred space. Maybe it's a garden or a living room chair, something. Some place that's sacred for you. But even when we were living on pennies during our first 7 years of the plant of this church, I would treat myself to a cheap brewed cup of coffee because I needed to I mean, I took my to-do list with me. Okay, I have to be honest. I was going to say I would need to be away from my to-do list. Well, in theory, yes, but I have my list with me always. But I don't do the list till I'm away from my sacred space. So I kind of look at it first, and then I set it aside. And then I read and I journal. And one of the things, there was a point when somewhere in all that, I'm trying to think if it was after Ryan was sick or gone or just in my dark journey, but there was somewhere in there that, and doing, you know, everything, that I thought I was going to lose my mind. I really did. I didn't think I was going to make it. And it's funny, I've shared all that with you, all this story, and that's what's going to make me cry. Isn't that weird? But I think part of what saved me was each morning when I sat there, I would write down where I saw God in the last 24 hours. I just needed to know that he was present in something, somewhere in this last 24 hours. I think it was Richard Rohr, but somebody said, no, it was a different author, but somebody said, if he isn't here now, he's not anywhere. If God isn't here in this moment, he isn't anywhere. And so I had to remember that I wasn't, that he was here and in it. And so I didn't want it to be a guilt thing. I didn't want to write down all the things I'm thankful for, because that just brings guilt, because, oh, I left out so-and-so, or I didn't, oh my gosh, that's so laborious and never fulfilling, because you can never write them all down. And no, I needed it to be fresh. God is here now. It's fresh. It's not from the past, from some victory back years ago and living on that victory. No, God is here in this moment, or he's not here at all. And so I wrote down, sometimes it would just be a few. It usually was 3 to 5 things, maybe one. But and there was a book by Gerald May that I read called The Awakened Heart. And he titled his gratitude list Reminders of Love. And I love that. And so that's what I title my list every morning, Reminders of Love. So my faith was built on a wounded child's view of God and the Bible. I found God in the midst of my childhood abuse when I was 14. I needed a rescuer. So I began to create a God that I needed. And I loved that God that I made. He was my constant companion. I still miss him. I do. Because that God was going to rescue me from everything. Was going to keep me, because he found me in this awful place and he rescued me. I clung to verses that would serve and bless me and fit that worldview. But after Ryan died, in the midst of my darkest days of remembering my trauma, the God I created crumbled. Here I was, still helping Kevin lead this church. And I didn't know what to do with the Bible anymore, or what to say to a God that I didn't know or understand. Now what? My God world I built disintegrated, and I was starting over. I was officially in the cocoon, and my carefully built faith was liquefied. Sue Monk Kidd, in her book When the Heart Waits, shares, I felt I had been dropped into an abyss of unknowing, into a stark confrontation with my own pain and wound. The darkness seemed to encircle me on every side. At times, I felt abandoned and afraid inside its roundness. At other times, the darkness felt strangely nurturing, swollen with the mystery of becoming. I wondered if this was what one encountered at the heart of the chrysalis. End quote. Tim Farrington shares, the dark night of the soul is an experience of being stripped of all the spiritual feelings and concepts with which we are accustomed to propping up our inner lives. It is a plunge into the abyss of radical unknowingness. This spiritual crisis is a call for celebration because it's only when we get out of our own way that the divine can take over and fill us with love. But it's a grueling process to come to this level of surrender. That's a tricky place to be when helping lead a church. And I needed a fresh voice. I needed a mentor. I didn't have mentors through the years because I didn't trust anyone older than me. Mm-hmm. That's a loss to grow up my whole adult life, never had any mentors. Didn't choose to trust anyone older. But I needed one. And I needed a fresh voice into the scriptures because now I didn't trust my interpretation of what I read. And monk and author Richard Rohr became my way back to the word, to love, and to mystery. James Finley, a colleague, I think he's a monk too, I can't remember, and a colleague of Richard Rohr shares, as we learn to trust in this paradoxical way God sustains us in our suffering, we are learning to sink the taproot of our heart in God, who, and this is really, you're going to have to chew on this one for a while. It's hard to hear. It's hard to hear. But I think there's truth here. It's a hard one. We are learning to sink the taproot of our heart in God, who protects us from nothing, even as God so unexplainably sustains us in all things. As this transformative process continues, we find within and beyond ourselves resources of courage, patience, and tenderness to touch the hurting places with love so that they might dissolve in love until only love is left. Oh, having everything else dissolve in love so only love is left. I love that. I also discovered, am I okay on time-wise? Oh. I also discovered contemplation. Contemplation is a form of prayer where you're just letting go. You can set a timer. I most often do it while I'm driving to my quiet time, but where you're just letting go of thoughts, giving them to God, letting the ego have a break, because that ego, our egos want to be in charge. Our mind wants to be in charge all the time. Wants to just, oh, man, that's hard. And, and my mind's convinced it saved me as a child. So my mind is really, really sold on the fact that it needs to be in charge. But contemplation, a time of letting go, became my path to surrender and allowing God access to every cell of my body. I had spent my whole adult life trying to transform myself, trying to learn to love. I worked so hard. I'm raising my kids and doing my quiet times and working so hard, and I knew something was missing. Well, I wasn't present, for one, and there was just, I didn't know all of my pain. It was all buried, and I couldn't touch it because I didn't even know, and I just knew. I put on my mirror for a whole year right before everything broke open, search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and see. Yeah, he answered that one. Richard Rohr shares, we come to a place where we don't need to prove ourselves to God anymore, where we know, as Thomas Merton put it, it's all mercy within mercy within mercy. We switch from trying to love God to just letting God love us. And it's at that point we fall in love with God. Up till now, we haven't really loved God. We've largely been afraid of God. But finally, perfect love casts out all fear. Through the last 20 years, I've had some recurrent messages. You know, the ones that in a song or in a book or someone says it, and it's like, oh my gosh, yes, I hear that again, that same message. For me, it's one of letting go, because I, you know, just want to control. And just letting go, letting go, let go. And I really want to do a tattoo on that one, but I don't know. We'll see. So I start jotting down in a notebook those words that keep resurfacing. And I'm sure you have your own words that messages the Spirit saying to you in your life and your struggles and what you've walked through and what how he wants to touch those soft spots in you and speak to you in those places. Here are some of the messages that I remind myself of daily. Letting go, you've already heard that one a bunch. Let go and surrender. Rest. I need to move slower. Kevin used to, back in the early days, I mean, once I was in the darkness, you know, he wasn't like saying this kind of thing, but back, he used to say, Brenda, walk like a ballerina. I used to be in ballet back in my younger years. He's like, walk like a ballerina, because I'm like on a mission. I was on a mission all the time. I was going to get it done. And that just made me grumpy, but he doesn't say it anymore. But so move slower. Don't cling. It's all, you know, letting go. Don't push the river. Rohr uses that phrase a bunch, but really it's just about just not pushing life, you know, just that intensity that we would just want to push it along. Listen, I want to listen to everything. Like I said, for so long, my head was so loud to keep me from being afraid, but now I just want to listen. And breathing, those tummy breaths that we've talked about. And you know what I realized? Okay, so a little bit of confession here. One thing is, I'm a little paranoid, you know, and I tickle on my head. I've shared this with a couple of you. Tickle on my head or cramp on my foot or pain somewhere, and I always have to Google it and see, because I'm sure it's cancer. And every single time it says it's stress. I mean like 5 or 6 things every time. The tickle on my head, it feels like there's a bug there, a bug. And I keep touching it. Is there a flea? Kevin, do you see anything? No, and I Google it. Oh, it's stress. Oh, no way. And it's like, oh my gosh. Oh, yeah. And, there was another one. Well, I won't try. Anyway. Oh, yeah, there was one. My stomach is like, you know, just not settling. It's not settling. It's just always not settling. So I looked it up, and I was looking at, like, restless bowel syndrome or something, and it said the cure, what they suggest for that is therapy. Really? 50? Okay. Now what? I don't even know. Okay. But I discovered with... So I was having, like when I'm driving, sometimes, especially a long ways, I get feet cramps, leg cramps, or in bed, I get a leg cramp, and I'm like, oh, it's got to be water. And I know there's lots of things it can be, especially in heat and all that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking just random times. And come to find out, it was that I was breathing up here. I was stressed, and I was breathing up here, and I was depriving my legs of oxygen. I'm driving along. My legs are cramping up. Oh, my gosh, maybe I should stop and pull over. No, about 4 or 5 deep tummy breaths, I'm cured. It's like gone. Oh, it's amazing. But anyway, breathing is good. And breathing with deep tummy breaths is a good thing. So next time you have a leg cramp. I want to be in the flow. I want to go through my days with hands open, with my shoulders relaxed. Choose mercy. Daily choose mercy as my way of seeing in the world. I want to see with the eyes of mercy, not with the eyes of judgment. The eyes of mercy, I want to see you, and I want to see inside of me. And I want to extend compassion to you, compassion to me. And remember, how you treat you is the compassion and mercy you have for you is how you're going to treat everybody else. How you do one thing is how you do everything. You watch. You observe yourself someday. Pick a thing of one that's like something that rises to the surface. How you do one thing is how you do everything. You look at that and you'll see it's true. And I want to remember that I'm forever a beginner and that unknowing is my friend. And because unknowing strips my pride and it opens me up to God. I'm going to close with a thought from Anne Lamott in her book, Traveling Mercies. She says, "What I've discovered is that the lifelong fear of grief keeps us in a barren, isolated place that only grieving can heal grief. The passage of time will lessen the acuteness, but time alone, without the direct experience of grief, will not heal it. I'm pretty sure that is only by experiencing that ocean of sadness in a naked and immediate way that we come to be healed, which is to say that we come to experience life with a real sense of presence, spaciousness, and peace." That's sweet. So I just want to invite you to have courage. If you find yourself in the dark or in a place of sadness or grief, to be present and to bless everyone around you by grieving, by compassion and mercy and grace to yourself, which will bless your whole family and your friends and your loved ones. Thanks.